Welcome to Bosch Investor Meet 2022. From the Bosch management, we have with us today Mr. Samudra Bhattacharya, Managing Director, Mr. Guru Prasad Mudalapur, Joint Managing Director and Chief Technology Officer, and Ms. Karin Gilges, Chief Financial Officer. Bosch management will first make a presentation and followed by we can have a Q&A session. In between, we'll have a coffee break after the presentations. And there are some statutory statements. Please note that all the contents of this presentation are only for information purpose. Most of the contents are internal Bosch estimates based on assumptions and experience of the management. And hence, we intend but cannot guarantee to be absolutely accurate. Any opinions and expressions in this presentation or the contents of this presentation are subject to changes without notice. The the presentation should not be construed as legal, tax, investment and other advice. Thanks. Over to you, sir.
Sorry, I'll change it. I can change it, isn't it? Yeah. Thanks. Very warm welcome to all the participants here. Thank you for taking time out. Luckily, during monsoon today, it hasn't rained as much, and it's really a delight to have you here physically after a couple of years we had a break. So we are looking forward to a very engaging discussion today, and between me and my colleagues, you already got the introduction from Mr. Annamalai Jayaraj. We will try to take you through some key messages, and of course, we will share with you what we see as the market, also share with you about our parent, our sister companies, but most importantly, Bosch Limited. So, my name is Soumitra Bhattacharya, and along with me, I have both Ms. Karin Gilges, who's the CFO. She's taken over recently. In the interim, I was doing the job. And also, we have Mr. Guru Prasad Mudalapur, who's the CTO as well as the JMD. So between the three of us, we will not only present, but also address your questions and look forward to a very interesting dialogue. The break is your choice, by the way. We've created a break just for, hygiene reasons. But if you want to continue amongst us the presentations, we can do that. So these are the topics that are being presented. I'm not going to read it out for you. There is a flow. There is a sort of handover and takeover amongst ourselves, but also there are we've tried to structure it in a manner that could be more easily understood and also shared with you. So let me give you a look back on Bosch Limited 21-22. Can we have the AV, please?
Thank you.
Thank you. By the way, this year, you know, 2022 is a special year for Bosch because we turned 100 years of Bosch in India, and I'll come to that a little later. So my first slide is about Bosch Global, Bosch India, and Bosch Limited. So if I, you know, decode this slide and give it to you in simple key sentences, our parent is around 80 billion euros. So you multiply that 80 into 80 is very simple, around, you know, 6,40,000 crores turnover, with about 4 lakh employees, 230 manufacturing locations. Very important, the parent is perhaps the only company in the world where 94% of its total equity, it's a private limited company, by the way, is owned by the Robert Bosch Charitable Foundation. And the foundation owns it but doesn't run the company. And 5% is with the Bosch family, but they don't in any way, you know, see to the daily business. And 1% is with the Robert Bosch Treuhand. So very unique structure where the executive management report to the supervisory council, and 94% of the equity owned by the foundation. The company, Robert Bosch, has been over decades putting in about 8 to 10% of its turnover in capex. This is also very unique. And about 8 to 10% on R&D, and about 6 to 8% on capex over decades. So it being a private limited company, being debt-free worldwide, and putting in these amounts on capex as well as on R&D indicates that the company looks for being invested for the future. And that's why the tagline is invented for life. Below you can see the four big pillars or divisions that Bosch, our parent, is in. Mobility Solutions accounts for approximately 60%. In India, this is about 85%, you can see, in Bosch Limited. Yeah. And then you have Industrial Technology, Consumer Goods, and Energy and Building. Our second biggest in India is 11%, what you can see. Now, Bosch India has 15 legal entities, and we are in practically every area, including mobility, consumers, you know, Bosch Home Appliances, BSH is a separate legal entity. And within the automotive or within the mobility part, there are certain units which are inside Bosch Limited. For example, diesel and gasoline, which is now called the powertrain, is within Bosch Limited, but Bosch chassis, Bosch automotive electronics, or Bosch electrical drives, or even automotive steering is outside the listed company. Many of these sister companies have interlinkages with the listed company. For example, the Bosch automotive products greatly go through for, you know, for all areas on ECUs which are for powertrain, example, either for gasoline or diesel, go through Bosch Limited. Example, two-wheelers, which is also a part of mobility, partly goes through, you know, Bosch Limited, but partly, which is linked to Bosch chassis, is not within Bosch Limited. So we have a strong interlinkage of the sister companies. Some parts of our their product solutions or systems also go through Bosch Limited. And Bosch Limited, of course, has the powertrain solutions, which is diesel, gasoline, hydrogen, electrification, and aftermarket, which is the AA, automotive aftermarket, a great part of the two-wheeler, building technologies, power tools, which is a consumer goods, and of course, I mentioned building technologies. I'm not going to tell you about the macroeconomics. Actually, you know it better than me. I can only say perhaps the interlinkages between what's happening in the world and India. Today in India, we are placed in a sweet spot relative to the world of in a very, very turbulent and volatile world to perhaps take, initiative and get our act right with the rest of the world on very clear basics. In my view, the governor is doing a very good job in trying to contain the inflation. Our inflation is, yes, high, but not as high today as what's happening in the world. Europe has, after the Second World War, has not seen as high inflation as it sees today. So there are many pros happening for India in a very difficult world. Of course, we know the impact of Brent and crude on our economy. Of course, we know that we have, relative to what we had planned, gaps in our current account. We also know that the RBI governor has had to sell sizable chunks of our forex reserves to contain the dollar. So you know that well enough. But what happened on 24th of February, with the start of the Ukraine and the Russia war, and after that, the series of things that unfolded, including the latest events on what's happening between US, China, or the China-Taiwan matter, are of great concern, which will affect the whole world and also India. And yet, amongst all the nations, relatively, and India is not the only country, is one of the few set of countries, which has a possibility for us to actually use this as an opportunity window and in the mid and long run strengthen our economic situation. And how do we convert this into what we call as the automotive outlook is something I will share with you. So let's look at the automotive outlook. These numbers are our indication of what we look as the future. And I've broken it up into, on the left side, the type of segments. Let me starting with passenger cars, heavy commercial vehicle, light commercial vehicle, tractors, three-wheelers, and two-wheelers. So all of us know that the peak of the Indian automotive market happened during the fiscal year 18-19 or the calendar year 18, whichever way you want to look at it. So passenger '22 calendar year, and here the years that I've indicated are calendar years. That's how our parent looks at it. And I've not put fiscal year. So passenger at the forecast for '22 looks more like crossing the peak of 1819 and going towards 6 million passenger. We estimate that in an e-mobility plus case, that means a very positive outlook towards e-mobility, that there's a possibility of a 30% share of EV. And when I say EV, it means all types of EVs, not just battery EV or pure EV. It could be hybrid, it could be mild hybrid, it could be battery electric vehicles, whichever type of EV, a 30% possibility is there. If you remember, 2 years ago when we were discussing, we were saying that, you know, this is around 25% and could go to 30. We're looking at a more optimistic scenario, and this would amount to a CAGR of around 4.6%. Heavy commercial vehicles, which had peaked at 480,000, we don't see it coming back for multiple reasons. You know, you have better roads, tolls were taken away, you have higher loads being transported, axle loads increased, and you have railroad competition, etc., etc. And then, of course, also there will be, in the years 28, 29, 30, some amount of change of the vehicles also. And my colleague will talk about it on what does hydrogen has an impact on heavy commercial vehicles. So we look at a good growth, and but we don't see crossing the peak. Light commercial vehicles, which have a chance of electrification, especially the sub 1 ton, you know, 670,000 will be touched this year and will go on to approximately 9 lakhs as we see, and has a very good chance, especially for the intra-city, for EV to come in and pick up. And we are talking of about a 20% EV from practically a zero base currently. Tractors had already, you know, shown the peak already 1.5 years ago. The peak of 9 lakh tractors. So India is the largest tractor manufacturer in the world, but small tractors, 35 horsepower to 50 horsepower, which we see are likely to continue as a majority. The bigger ones will still be on a minority. And we have crossed that. And it's already at a very high volume. And we expect it, you know, to be in the bandwidth of 10 lakhs to 12 lakhs, so 1.2 million. And it also has a good... And later we'll come to the content per vehicle, because we'll have to look at volume, we'll have to look at content per vehicle, and then what we'll talk about is the addressable target addressable market, TAM, convert that. So three-wheelers had impact on COVID, and that 1.25 million is going to take a long, long time to get back, and that's what we are saying, 29-30 for it to get back. And three-wheeler electrification possibility we see along with two-wheeler electrification. And here on two-wheelers, the peak of 25 million. And don't forget, the entry-level two-wheeler costs have gone up. When we had the 25 million vehicles, the cost of two-wheelers, and especially the entry-level, the 100cc, 125cc, was totally different from what you have today. And also you had, you know, the fuel injection system, where earlier we had carburetors. So content has changed. Two-wheelers' costs have changed. Ownership, therefore, has not become as strong. And we expect the 25 million to be crossed sometime around 25 and then to move forward. But also two-wheelers will have a decent percentage of electrification. So what does this mean in content per vehicle? Because you have to look at the volumes. You'll have to look at the mix within the volumes. And then you'll have to look within the mix how much remains at powertrain possibility, what could be the possibility of electrification, and then what does it mean in content per vehicle. Now, these content per vehicle are indicators in terms of X for industry. So sometimes the content from BS4 to BS6 has not really shifted in a major way. If you look at from the port fuel injection from BS4 to BS6 of 1.1x or the GDI or the CNG. But when you look at the CRS, you know, that has pretty much changed. If you remember, in the February 2020 Auto Expo, I had indicated that pre-COVID, that was before the COVID happened in March, pre-COVID, Bosch had acquired around 23,000 crores worth of acquisition for BS6. I even stated after COVID that 23,000 had got converted to anywhere between 18 and 19,000 post-COVID, because it's all about demand at that time. So there was a very good acquisition that we did, and acquisitions normally are taken for a period of 5 years, excluding the year that is being discussed. So you can say 5 plus 1, 6. So in the same way, our acquisition trend, and later I'll come to that, is at a very solid base besides the BS4 to BS6. BS4 to BS6, Bosch more or less had actually handheld the industry, and India did it at the fastest level, where Europe had done it 8 years, India did it in 3 years. Now, if you look at the BS4 to BS6 for the LCV and the HCV, you have also a multiple of HCV 1.6x and 1.8x content. Again, you know, the exhaust gas treatment got added. There were other elements that got added. And in case of TREM 3A to TREM 4, TREM 5, and in TREM 5, when you go to CRS, so currently a tractor has an inline pump. And when that goes in, you can even have a 5 plus X content change. So, the legislation roadmap and the emission roadmap in India, which actually changes the technology. And I remember about 7 years ago, we were 17 years behind Europe, and today we are about 4 years behind Europe as we speak, and it's narrowing, has a change. And the Indian consumer has been quite adaptive to the price changes. And you yourself can see it in your own buying pattern of cars, what you would have thought of 5-7 years ago, what band, and today what bands they are being released and what you're buying at. So first one was volume. This is content per vehicle. And Bosch is positioned well within the industry on the content per vehicle for improving the content, including having its portfolio and expanding our portfolio. This results in target total addressable market, or TAM. So the TAM here is shown by value. First column is in 2022, what is the TAM? Then the same TAM by value in 2029-30, whatever you want to look at. And then the overall TAM CAGR between 22 to 29. So the first one is diesel, the first one on the top left. The second one is petrol or gasoline, the third one is CNG, and the fourth is battery or electrification. So here what you need to read is CNG as the base. Let's take CNG as the base. Yeah. So if you look at TAM by value, where we know CNG plays a role but not a significant one, if that is X, then diesel by value would be 10X, petrol would be 4X. And here we are talking of the whole market. Don't think of only passenger and utility vehicle. And then this would be 6X. So here you can also see, when you look at the diesel, we have also put the CAGR based on ICE for passenger cars, then on ICE for heavy commercial vehicles on the right, then for light commercial vehicles, and for tractors, and for two-wheelers. And there's a line in between to clearly indicate that they are two separate things we are talking, but what does it translate to? So the first part, if I go to the left side, you see a negative of CAGR for the petrol, because the 4X of 22 will translate only to 4Y based on when you make CNG, but electrification on a very low base will be 20Y by 29. So you have to look at how the multipliers are happening, but you must also remember what the base is with CNG as a base. So while diesel will grow steadily, but not as fast or as high, the difference delta on 22, instead of a 10X, it's a 7.5Y. However, we see that because of the mix change, the 4Y will actually be, in the terms of a CAGR, a slight negative. And here you can see, I've also written, CNG is considered the base only for comparison, and all these are due to the drive shift due to the EV, and also what I've indicated here is that there's a low base of EV on TAM in 22, which all of us know is 1%. And the CAGR for ICE is indicated in values. So you have to read this, number one, on what is the current situation in 22. Then you have to see how in some of the areas electrification is having an impact. Remember, our impact, we said, is 30% as the best case for EV, for passenger cars and utility vehicles, not for others. And then you have to see that this is an addressable market. So if I add up now in simple terms to the summary, what is the volume, which was shown in the first slide? The second slide, what is the content per vehicle? There's some sound happening. Sorry, something I pressed by mistake. Okay, we lost our colleagues, I'm sorry. So I'll just finish. So in summary, the three elements that I talked of was volumes, as we see between 22 and 29, the content per vehicle, which is shifting based on legislation and emissions, and this volume into content per vehicle, how it gets then addressed into total addressable market. Summary is Bosch is well positioned to retain its position on both technology, which you later see from my colleague, as well as acquisitions for not only our core, or what we call as revived core, our adjacencies, but also the new business areas. And this has a strong linkage also with the technology roadmap that our parent plays, and already the acquisition, which we have a very strong umbilical cord between our parent and us, and we do it at arm's length in a very fair manner, and then we apply it for innovation and, of course, affordability. So the picture of the vehicle is changing into PACE, personalized, automated, connected, and electrified. And here you can see this is something that our parent has been working for many years already. For example, on electrified, our parent has been spending 400 to 500 million euro for the last 10, 11, 12 years. Later, my colleague will share the acquisition value currently that our parent has. I told you the investments are already nearly 5 billion euro till now on electrification and climbing. But we are very strong. You must remember that Bosch is also very strong, not only in the world, but also in India on software. So Bosch is good at components. Many of you call it a component company, but it's not really a component company. It's a systems and solution company. So it's good at components, it's good at systems. It's also good at solutions because today a car is defined not only by the mechanical parts, but greatly driven by electronics, sensors, and most importantly, software. And Bosch is strong in each of these elements. So whether it's the personalization of a vehicle, which now you see more and more, ADAS, which gives you automation, and of course in India you don't need autonomous, but Bosch is already at level 4 and on the road, can go to level 5. Strongly connected cars are becoming very, very strongly connected. You call it a phone on four wheels nowadays, and of course electrification. So in summary, I would request you to look at this slide in two parts. A, PACE is connected all over the world. Our parent is very strong in it. We have already a lot of strengths within PACE, but most importantly, we draw on our parent strengths to use what is tight, trusted, and proven through acquisitions also for India. One change that you should note, the pace of electrification in the world will not be similar in India. I'll give you the reason why. If you take Euro 7, which is the change of norms for ICE, that's applicable in 27. Now, most of the OEMs in Europe are looking at, should we go for Euro 7 or should we go for electrification? Because it doesn't make sense to put investment upfront for Euro 7 and then within 2 years then go for electrification. Because they also have a cutoff for the electrification and vehicles to be electrified. Yeah? So in India, ICE will still remain dominant for quite some time. And the pace of electrification of what is happening in Europe is very likely not to be followed in India unless there is disruption of statutory laws, which I honestly don't anticipate because it's a country of a strong park and you can't make such changes. So quickly, this was one part on the matter on pace and perhaps the slight difference between what's happening in Europe and more importantly in India. Two-wheeler business, I mentioned to you, 25 million, which is currently at 19, going towards crossing the 25 in the year 2025, has several elements to it. And Bosch is also strongly entrenched in the two-wheeler business. We have strong electrification projects in two-wheelers. Some of them who launched, we already talked to you. We don't talk about it until the launches happen. Worldwide, the supply chain crisis on semiconductors is still going on, including overall supply chain, but for two-wheeler, this is even more applicable. We did have a bit of a lull in two-wheeler because of the entry price growing up and the demand not being high, but growth will pick up. Raw material price, later you'll hear from my colleague Karen Gilgis, is a major issue, not just for two-wheeler, for everything. Automotive companies, and including the OEMs, the pressure on costs, what they're having, the tier ones are having the equal pressure because, prices of raw material, prices of electronics, and prices of logistics have seriously gone up. So there has to be a win-win between OEMs, tier ones, tier twos, of what you can absorb and what you can pass on. So Bosch has a very clear system, including Bosch Limited, of what we should and we will recover. So it's a very clear game plan. And then, of course, in case of two-wheeler, from 23 to 25, you are aware of the OBD. And if that shifts, that will be a two-year. We don't see a major hit in our business, but there could be a shift from 23 to 25. And finally, fuels will also play an important role, including flex fuel, again, for which we have solutions on the fuel part too. In Bosch Limited, I covered powertrain a bit, but now I'll come to aftermarket. This is a very fast-growing business. It's the last 2 years it's grown in very strong double digits, and we expect this year also to be an equally good year. From nearly 125 Bosch car services, we are up to 400, and by 2025, we should go towards 1,000. Yeah. So we expect, you know, Bosch's analytics through diagnostics to be a USP, because today you can't have a mom and pop car repair shop anymore. Gone are the days that you can solve it just with, you know, as we say in Hindi, hathori. So you need not just electronics, but you also you need very strong analytics and tools and diagnostic tools, which Bosch worldwide has. By the way, last year, Bosch completed 100 years of the Bosch car service worldwide. So this is one area which we'll strongly look at. But more importantly, automotive market with its Zing Plus strategy has improved its reach, has improved its coverage, and also its entire product and services portfolio. So this is one area where we will continue to grow, and we did a tie-up with AutoZilla. This is an e-commerce space which allows you to know inventory, sales, purchases, and also the location. And this we are also using effectively. Our Power Tools, which is also a market leader, where we want to also grow by 5 percentage points on market share, is also doing very well. And we have a very clear focus to go towards the MPP range in India. We are at the, you know, all ranges of the HPP. We are partly also at the high end of the MPP. We would want strongly be entrenched in the MPP in India. We want to have a very clear focus on cordless, matlab Bosch. Cordless is not commonly used in India, but, you know, the productivity, efficiency can improve tremendously. And of course, we are making our whole ecosystem like automotive market extremely digital. So A, as a market leader, we have strengthened our current policy. We see a very strong drive in power tools. Our Chennai factory has been voted out of its 4 years of existence three times the world's best factory. It's all-woman factory, by the way, and that helps. And we have a further localization plan for our power tools, also Make in India and Atmanirbhar Bharat. Building technology is a small part of Bosch Limited. It's broken up into these four areas, and we are now looking at localization opportunities because we clearly see, you know, a lot of imports we do for this from different countries, including China, and the government is really discouraging China origin products. So we are looking at further localization opportunities. We are also looking at inorganic partnerships. So you will see Bosch Limited doing more and more inorganic partnerships also for the future. Talking about inorganic opportunities, we have done quite a few. You remember, while of course Sun Mobility was invested through Bosch Netherlands, but it has been given, the Bosch India executive team has the responsibility. My colleague Guru Prasad Mudlapur is actually front-facing that with Sun Mobility. But if you see the many other names, we have bought minority shares in multiple startups or small companies, and we will continue to invest. But also in the future, do not be surprised if we also invest in mid or larger companies, because we are looking for synergies, we are looking for partnerships, and in each of the areas. It could be in the powertrain area, it could be in the aftermarket, in the power tools, or in the building technologies, any of these areas, or even in the digital ecosystem. ESG, this is a very interesting thing, you know. There's a saying, if you're good, you have to also talk that you're good. And, you know, we made a mistake of not talking about it. You just see the scores on the left, what was earlier, of E, S, and G. Bosch Limited was rated at 55 by CRISIL, with E at 44, S as in social as 56, and G governance at 65. Not very good. And where we are today is, the score has improved from 22.6 to 13.2. Lower the better. My colleague Rishit is here with me, and Rishit is one of the team members who's driving this. And today, Bosch Limited has also improved its rank from 60th out of 209 to 4th out of 165. We have our annual report, and from page 52 for the next 30 pages, we have described what our ESG policy is. And we can, of course, to the investor community and y'all, we can give you the e-link. Yeah, Rishit, we can keep a note, those who want, and share. So we have a very strong ESG focus. We were doing it, but now we are also stating it. We are one of the few companies in the world globally who became carbon neutral in 2020. And in India, also scope 1 and 2, we are carbon neutral. Great place to work. You can't do any of these things for the future if you don't have good people and motivated. I remember 4 years ago when we started, we were at the median. Today, about a month and a half ago, they announced that Bosch Limited is in not only the top quartile, but also amongst the best places to work in auto and auto component companies. So this is something that we are quietly proud about. But what is most important is we are creating a high-trust, high-performance culture, and we are creating this push and pull because the world is changing and we have to adapt with the world. The average age of Bosch Limited today is down to 35 and dropping. The average age of a software company is 28 and dropping. 30th June, we opened our smart campus. Those of you who have been to Bangalore, in the heart of the city, we have the 75-acre campus. We've invested in the last 5 years 800 crores for this campus. 10,000 Boschlers, roughly one-third of the total Boschlers in India, we have 31,500, will work out of this. If you look at the four-floor space, from Mumbai standards, we should actually put 1,20,000 people in, including, you know, cell space out. We will not do that. Of course, you can ask ROI, ROC, you know, return, interest, yeah, but we will not do that. That's Bosch. We are creating a great place for people to work. It's university styled, it's green, you can work from anywhere within, and it's vibrant. And the great part is it's one of the smartest campuses today, not just in Karnataka, but also in India. This was inaugurated by the Prime Minister, and you perhaps have heard him speak about Bosch. He's not really inaugurated MNCs. And he called Bosch a company which has German engineering and Indian energy. So next up is my colleague, Karen Gilgis, who will share with you the financials. I end by saying only three things. One, this is a very volatile world, and India also is volatile. However, India is in a relatively sweeter spot for us to grab this opportunity, and therefore also the mobility world or the other industries. Second, Bosch in India has been here for 100 years, and we have a very strong tie-up with a parent who gives us you know, unqualified support, and of course as a listed company with high principles of governance and arm's length. We will continue to bank on them while having, and we also in India have the largest R&D center in the Bosch world outside Germany. And third, Bosch Limited has been transforming and transitioning into this new world. And we will retain our strengths to rewire our core. We will continue our journey on adjacencies, but we are very strongly also transitioning and transforming for the new age business, which details further my colleague Guru will speak of. So over to my colleague Karen Gilgis. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining our annual investor meeting today, and of course also a warm welcome from my side. I would like to take you today through the finance and business update. And I would like to start with the last year's revenue from operations. You can see compared to the previous year, 2021, We had a growth of 21%, but please keep in mind that we are coming from a very low base, because as all of us know, we were hit very hard by the COVID all over the world, and therefore this 21% is a very good growth, but of course based on a low previous year. Nevertheless, in the year 21-22, we have almost reached our peak in of 2018-2019, and therefore a quite good year in the last year. In EBIT, we see an increase of 38% for the relevant time period, which ended up by 9.6% of the total revenue. And as like our parent, as my colleague Schumidro already mentioned, we are going ahead in investing into our future with 6.3 billion INR in R&D, 4.1 billion in our plants and machinery, as well as you just saw it in the last slides, state-of-the-art technology center in Adugodi, Bangalore. And last but definitely not least, we will go ahead, and I will show you this later on if we're coming now to the year 22. The year 22 is characterized by a steep increase in raw material. And as you can see in the graphs, the prices for flat and round steel are three times higher compared to 2020. Besides this challenge, we face major disruptions in the supply chain, for example in semiconductors, and the uncertainty of the global economical effects like the Ukraine war in Europe. The increase in crude oil elevated the freight costs, and the costs of the entire supply chain is at an all-time high currently. But material costs are also influenced by changes in legislation. With the change from BS4 to BS6, we had subsequently a mix in our product portfolio and therefore also in the material costs. Of course, we go ahead with further localization in the upcoming years to adapt to these new frame conditions and optimize our recovery from the customers. If we look at our dividend, you can see that we are maintaining a consistency in our dividend payments in the last 5 years. The board of directors in the board meeting in May 22 have recommended a dividend of 210 rupees, which includes a dividend of 100 rupees per share for 100 years, Bosch here in India. So the total dividend payout for the year 21-22 is 51%. And as in the previous year, of course, because we are on a lower profit after tax. If we look at our liquidity situation, we have our liquidity is quite solid and quite stable. We are adequately funded in our investments plans while remitting the dividends. And also, if you have a look at the cash flow, we have a very robust cash flow. So overall, a solid liquidity situation in the Bosch Limited. If we now look in the year, in the first quarter of the fiscal year 22-23. Again, if we compare it with the previous year or the quarter of this year with the quarter of the last year, then of course we see a high jump of 45%. Nevertheless, please keep in mind the COVID year 21. If you compare the last quarter, April to June 22 to January to March 22, then we see a good increase of 7.1% in the revenue. We have closed with operating profit, EBIT of 10.9%, 12.3% in the BPT and 9.4% in the BAT. So if we look at the revenue in the quarter April to June 22, Then we had an improved supply of the semiconductors, which helped us to come or to fulfill the market demands. And we had especially a very good demand and delivery into the tractor market. If you make an outlook for the overall year 22, then our current sales forecast showing a revenue growth of more than or roughly 15%. We are optimistic to achieve a healthy EBIT margin again. We go ahead in the investing into the R&D with 5.8 million. We will have further capital expenditures with 5.1 million. And we are also going ahead in investing in our new business like digitalization, electrification and hydrogen with 2 billion INR. So overall, the outlook of the year 22-23 is positive. Nevertheless, if you look at the overall frame conditions, of course, we have to watch out what is happening in the material market, what is happening all over the world. But nevertheless, positive and cautious on the risks which could occur. Thank you very much. And either we have a break or we can go ahead with my colleague.
Okay. So, Guru, popular demand.
Do I continue?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry?
No, you can finish it up.
Okay. Shall I do it? So good evening, everyone, and welcome to this meet. It's really a refreshing change to have people face to face. So at least gives us an opportunity to interact with each other even beyond the presentation. So I'll take you through technology aspects of where we are and where we will go with our business at Bosch. So I'll give you an overall perspective of where things are headed and then take you through the next steps. So if you imagine a world some 70, 80 years ago, we tend to plot technology curves in S-curves. So technology starts, it ramps up, and then it sort of saturates. And we can say, if you look at the plot in the middle, we are probably for the last 70, 80 years, we've been largely on a S-curve, which is pretty stable and now slowly declining with regard to combustion engine business or the car or the vehicle as we have seen so far, which is a typical picture you see on the left. But if you now look at where we are and look further into the future, we start to see the emergence of a new S-curve, which will lead us to changes which are pretty exponential for the auto world, which will drastically change the way we look at things, which will bring in new technologies, which will bring in a confluence of multiple technologies. For example, some of the things Soumitra talked about in terms of personalized, automated, connected, electrified. So there are many of these things happening. And some OEMs have started to be early adopters of this globally. One good example is Tesla, which has led the way on the second S-curve already for some time now. But a large part of the OEM base today, especially also in India, is still on the primary S-curve and looking at how to transition to the secondary S-curve. So it's still very early days. At the same point, we should remind ourselves that if we look at a global vehicle park of maybe 85 million vehicles and look at a time point in future like 2030, we will still have maybe 45, 50 million vehicles on the primary S-curve still. So there is still a lot of life left on the primary S-curve. And while the secondary S-curve is where all the excitement is, but there is a lot of money still to be made and a lot of technology upgradation also happening on that. And I'll talk a little bit of the both. So Soumitra talked about this. I won't go deep into this. And there are multiple elements happening all at once. The personalization of the vehicle, which is now starting to more look like an extension of our mobile phone in the mobility world. Automated driving, which is becoming very, very feasible at some point of time in the future. While simple driver assistance features start to come in now, but at a point of time very soon, we will have much more highly automated driving features coming in. We, of course, already have a highly connected car. Lots of new technologies will come in, including technologies towards cybersecurity and so on, which will enable us to have a much more connected environment between cars, between infrastructure. So this is something that will happen quite a lot. And all of this, the primary base to carry multiple technologies here will be the electrification. So on an electrified base, you start to have new technologies introduced with sort of very low legacy. So that's the big advantage of where we are headed on the new S-curve. And that's the exciting part here. So the vehicles of the current, as we have now, may not have all sorts of new features introduced. They will, of course, have some of them coming in. But at some point of time, it's the electrified platforms that will carry most of the new features as we see today. I will very quickly take you through what Bosch does in general about, also in India, about the personalized, automated, and connected parts, not necessarily at Bosch Limited, but we've been leading this technology space overall as Bosch in India. We have already several design-ins. If you look at, I can talk about it because it's already out in the open, the Mahindra XUV 700, the personalization, the Adrenox platform is Bosch. So a lot of these things start to come in, which bring in new ways of experiencing for... Okay, so I thought you were going to stuff something in my mouth. So now I have a bad throat, so I don't know. I thought maybe he's realized that. Okay. So... lot of these things start to come in as we move forward. So in terms of the automated space, we might think India will lag behind, but there are several levels of automation, and at least the first two levels already start to come into Indian vehicle base. Good examples are all the driver assistance features, which are very, very useful. Automated parking or assistance towards side views. So a lot of these things are very useful, and they will come into Indian vehicles as well. And we already have several design-ins with Indian OEMs on this. Connected is another space which will not escape the automotive world. Cars get highly connected. Lots of communication happens both ways. Content coming into the vehicles and content going out of the vehicles. And for automated driving to happen, connected cars are an absolute must. So in that sense, we start to do a lot of these things. The reason I talk a little bit about this is also because many of these things have interlinkages to what we also do at Bosch Limited. And when we have these domains picking up, we also have multiple things going off from Bosch Limited. Of course, all the electrification and topics around this, which will be largely the focus of what I talk in the next 10-12 minutes, will be centered at Bosch Limited, and I will get into the details of that. So Bosch has always believed in continued greening of the environment, the mobility environment, and we have looked at how to clean the current powertrains, which can be improved emission norms. So as we go forward, we've also driven the hybrid wave for a long time. We are one of the global leaders of hybrid technologies for vehicles. And of course, we are now working very heavily on electrification. Soumitra already talked about how we've invested over the last 10 years, close to $500 million year on year. And that is an investment of over 5-6 billion euro into electrification technologies for Bosch globally. And since 2018, already we realized this is a wave which is coming into India, and we started to invest in India as well. So both in terms of basic technologies for electrification, making electrification technologies robust for India, customizing safety aspects towards the Indian conditions, every aspect of this we start to focus also in the Indian context. Very quickly, I do not want to ignore the fact that we will have a very large park of vehicles even in 2030, which will be largely combustion related. So there will be quite some advances in that, and globally Bosch has lots of technology in this, be it in terms of natural gas engines, be it in terms of flex fuel, or in terms of specific customized technologies towards off-highway or other segments. So we have the complete portfolio of technologies which we will offer. We've already started to talk to all the tractor OEMs. We have acquisitions there as well, and we will drive the wave as we go further on combustion technologies too. Now let's focus a little bit more on battery electric vehicles and another special topic of mine, hydrogen, and why we believe that's also going to make a significant impact here. So on battery electric vehicles, just to give you a context, this is, by the way, based on publicly available information. Dates could move plus and minus a little bit here and there, but by and large, we believe these are correct. OEMs have already announced a sort of end of design for ICE vehicles. So they've all said by 2030, roughly centering around that time frame, some a couple of years earlier, some a couple of years later, what happens with regard to electrification and how they intend to switch over and to what extent they prefer to switch over in terms of whether it's combustion technology continuing or electrification coming in into the auto world. And we are tracking this very closely. We do work with global OEMs everywhere, and we have full awareness of what's happening. And this is what helps us develop technologies at the right pace and for multiple OEMs as we go forward. So whether it's a complete battery electric vehicle or combination technologies of hybrid plus battery electric vehicle, this is a wave which will come. And we are very, very aware of this and already working with multiple global OEMs. In fact, our global acquisition on electrification today exceeds 22 billion euro, I think. So it's a very large amount of acquisitions we already have on electrification. What normally drives adoption of technologies is the aspect of legislation. And Europe, if you have observed, recently legislated approved a legislation to end combustion engines by 2035. So that's sort of a clear indication that they will have no further sale of ICE vehicles after 2035. And OEMs will, of course, follow that very, very closely. And while this has not been made so clear in the other parts of the world, but plus or minus a few years here and there, the same kind of trends will happen. But we don't see that yet in the Indian context. And like Soumitra already mentioned, we do not yet foresee that kind of a clear mandate coming in. But there will be other drivers which will drive technology introductions. And we are very, very closely watching and working to make that happen. So this just gives legislation roadmap on when what the government mandates in the Indian context, both for safety and for powertrain. And this clearly shows how legislation has largely propelled growth in India and will continue to drive this growth. So there is still a lot of life left, and I keep repeating myself on this with regard to ICE technologies, and this is something that will continue. But of course, at some point of time, there is an end to that, and there is a need to prepare ourselves for electrification, and we're doing everything to get ahead of the curve there. So in terms of being on the second S curve, I think we've spotted this change maybe 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and we've invested extensively to be riding that second S curve very, very well. Some global drivers for electrification, and specifically in the Indian context, three main things we track and we believe are going to make a difference. One is the total cost of ownership. The second one is how the overall EV ecosystem develops in India, and of course in every country around the world. Last but not the least, in the Indian context today, it's largely the subsidies and the incentives which drive electrification. And take this element out, there is not going to be sale of EV vehicles today. And that's something we as a technology company are very well aware of, and trying to look at how technology can mitigate this, how can we have better technology at the more optimum prices, and at what point of time would this really help take over as we move forward. We believe, and Soumitra already talked about it, he took away a lot of what I wanted to say through his words, but I'll give it anyway. We believe in a good e-mobility plus scenario, about 30% of vehicles sold in the world would be electric, and maybe even a little bit more. A lot of this is maybe not so much limited by technology, but also limited by the amount of investments that can come into this segment. So there is huge amount of investment required, and some of you who track the giga factory developments for lithium ion or other battery technologies that come in will realize the extent of investment that has to come in. So both have to happen hand in hand. And that's one reason why we believe, especially in the Indian context, this has to go together. Because we can't simply, from one day to another, switch over to a totally new ecosystem and then make it all work. But we believe on a very good basis, 30% electrification in India is a very good feasibility, and we are very well prepared for that. So in terms of our global product portfolio, we have everything from low voltage all the way up to high voltage, covering segments from e-bikes. By the way, we are the global leader of e-bike powertrain systems. E-bike meaning bicycles which are driven by electric batteries and electric motors, right up all the way up to powertrains for heavy commercial vehicles. So the complete range from powertrains to energy management systems to energy management and control, system control, vehicle control systems, the whole range of portfolio is available within Bosch. And the whole range of portfolio is now being offered to Indian OEMs with or without adaptation. So of course, Indian OEMs also require some level of adaptation, and we start to do that locally. In terms of level of integration, probably Bosch is one of the most unique companies which goes all the way down from semiconductors right up to the final product that can go directly into a bus or a vehicle or a cycle. So in terms of electronics, we cover the entire range. We have a very large portfolio of electronics, and we take the entire breadth of it, right from semiconductors all the way up. Of course, we still are, maybe as a tier one of the largest buyer of semiconductors, but that just shows the scale at which we operate. EXL is a typical product which Indian OEMs have been looking at very, very intently. This is a combination of a motor, an inverter, and all the power electronics that drive the motor and the electronics. And this combination of these three gives significant efficiency advantages as a unique one-box solution. This is something which you see in today's vehicles already in on the Indian roads, and we will offer these into OEMs, and we are discussing with several of them as we speak now. We are also very, very strong in battery systems. We've got a full portfolio of 48-volt traction batteries. We are a leader in hybrid battery technologies, and we offer the full range as well. And yeah, maybe just to wrap it up, hydrogen is a really upcoming technology. So as a more as a teaser today, but also to tell you that this is something which should interest a lot of you, because there are big announcements happening, billions and billions of dollars of commitment, even in the Indian context, happening towards building a hydrogen ecosystem. And why do they do that? Is because of this picture. Basically, if you look at what we have as diesel or a gasoline ecosystem, petroleum-based ecosystem today, which sort of started 80-100 years ago. That is the kind of an ecosystem that has to come up for hydrogen as we move forward. And that's a massive challenge, massive opportunity, and there are big guys very keen to invest in this. Bosch has spotted this already quite some time ago as a technology which will drive specifically long-haul trucks and certain categories of vehicles. And we believe this is very well suited also in the Indian context. And we have started to talk to several OEMs in India and several ecosystem players who are coming into the generation of hydrogen. So we have technologies which help generate hydrogen through electrolysis. We have technologies which distribute, help distribute, store. And of course, a whole range of technologies which get into the vehicles to offer hydrogen-based mobility. And I'll very quickly talk about two flavors of this. So there are likely, or there will be two variants of hydrogen vehicles. The first one is a fuel cell electric vehicle, which is the more global norm, which is likely to come up in the future. There are several companies already in trials, several pilots running all over the world, and Bosch is probably the only company which offers an extensive end-to-end portfolio of hydrogen-based components here. So on the extreme right, you see a one-box solution. We call it the twin box. This is a 200-kilowatt power plant, as you can call it. This is basically replacing the engine in a commercial vehicle. So you plug this in into a commercial vehicle, it is replacing the complete engine. And at the other end, you have the hydrogen storage. So storage is also essential in a vehicle. And if you take the entire range, it covers everything that is required to make a hydrogen vehicle come alive. Of course, there are other elements to a vehicle, but by and large, the tier one level component, and even much more than a tier one level component, is what's on offer here. We also see the emergence of a new class in India where hydrogen could be an injection source into combustion vehicles, so as hydrogen engines. And this is something where India seems to have taken a lead in the global context, because we simply have a very huge park of combustion vehicles which can be simply converted to take hydrogen, plus of course have direct OE fitments of hydrogen vehicles as we move forward. So we have end-to-end injection systems for hydrogen, and we already are talking to several OEMs on this. Extremely good interest in this technology, and we also have the first acquisitions on this project today. So we have several projects running globally. with Nicola, with CellCentric, Qingling in China, maybe we are the only one who has large amount of hydrogen pilots running globally. And so it's easy for us to bring in all the technology into the Indian roads here. And we have the local acquisitions on hydrogen engine as well already. So just to wrap it up, we cover end-to-end portfolio on the new S-curve. Specifically on electrification, we cover everything from low voltage all the way up to heavy commercial vehicles, both at a battery electric vehicle level and at fuel cell or hydrogen level, as and when the technologies can come in. We are very focused on building these technologies for the Indian market and in line with what our customers locally want, including the right levels of localization as we move forward. So be rest assured that we are leading the second wave as well. Thank you.
Yeah. We'll have a coffee break for 15 minutes. We'll assemble at 3:45 for a question and answer session. Thank you. We can now go on for Q&A session, and it will be for about an hour. We'll end at 4:45. And we'll have a mic. Has question, can raise their hand. We'll give you mic for asking the questions. Yeah.
Hi, so my name is Viraj. I'm from Simple Securities Investment Management. Just a couple of questions. Broadly on the, one is on, you know, one of the slides which you talked about where you showed the TAM for different vehicle segments between 2022 and 2029. You know, given that we have other group subsidiaries who are also in the similar space, just trying to understand how much of that value addition will kind of come within the listed entity vis-a-vis other group entities and the kind of capex we would have to entail to capture that value addition in the listed entity. So that is one.
Our capex in Bosch Limited is anywhere between a low of, you know, 250-300 crores goes up to 500-550 crores here. And for the Bosch in India, it's anywhere between a low of 400 and goes up to 700, maybe 800. Yeah. So the capex thing is completely dependent on market requirements. We are driven completely by market and advanced planning. The listed entity, I've already shown you what it contains. The listed entity contains, many of you were talking, contains the powertrain. And some of you asked the question, so about electrification hydrogen, that will be in the listed company. And of course, we spend capex for not just powertrain, but for automotive aftermarket, for power tools, yeah. And we have building technologies and two-wheeler as a front-facing to the customer. So these are the listed entity, and the other parts are in different legal entities.
So the reason I ask is, you know, we.
But I can't give you now beyond this a further breakup of.
No, I understand. What I'm trying to get at is, we also made a commitment to participate in the PLI, so we talked about 200 crores.
The listed entity has applied and been approved,
okay,
along with a couple of other Bosch legal entities. But the listed entity is very much applied and in the PLI.
Okay, so basically this indicative range is including the investment in advanced automotive products, right?
Yes, naturally.
Okay.
Whatever we put, it is for everything, including advanced automotive technologies.
Okay. Second question is broadly on the margins. You know, just to understand over next, say, 3, 4, 5 years, pretty long-term, horizon. So if you look at last year or two, you know, we had a couple of multiple impacts, as you talked about in the past, RM, Forex volatility. You had transfer pricing impact related to traded goods and then the product mix. So if we just trying to understand the traded goods and the related transfer pricing impact, if you were to kind of understand how contract pricing is arrived at, because are the purchases more on CIF or FOB basis? So are we the one who kind of bearing the impact related to freight or, and similarly in regards to the forex or the raw material? So any volatility regard to that, is it kind of bought by the manufacturing entity, or we are the one who are bearing it? And is there a back-to-back arrangement with the OEs for recovery of same?
Okay. Part of your question is a leading question towards guidance. So I'll avoid the guidance part of it and I'll give you the non-guidance answer. Bosch has very good contracting systems with OEMs, and it depends on which OEM what, but we have very comprehensive OEM contracting and very strong process-oriented worldwide, but also for India. Our CFO's presentation contained that we have a very strong focus towards recovery on RMI and ECI and also logistics cost. So that's, again, on a win-win situation. You know, the OEMs can't recover everything, we can't recover it, but we have a very strong method and a very clear intent of also focusing on that part. That was a part of the presentation. So the second part to the thing. The third part in terms of what you asked as margins. Margins are a direct function of what you do at the marketplace. So we focus very strongly on getting the right acquisition. I told you BS4 to BS6. I also want to assure you that other than BS4 to BS6, our acquisition book this year is at an all-time high. So we have a strong acquisition book for our whole mobility business, which includes the listed company. And margins, as I mentioned, are a part. Our CFO's presentation also stated, just to give an example, we have started also investing additionally for new businesses. So you saw 2 billion INR for new businesses. So we are also further investing for the future, specifically.
Just last question was on that as well. So, you know, the investment which you talked about, 200 crores in this year. Typically, when we say about investment in new age businesses, these are in what form? So what is the nature of these? Are these purely tech transfer payments to parent?
No.
Or these are like tied to specific customer SOPs? And how do we go about measuring the efficiency of these means?
So that these are investments which we are doing for hydrogen, electrification, digital. We believe very strongly that we have to put project houses, which we did already 3-4 years ago, and put also money, people, resources, competence. Because if you don't build it, you don't get prepared for them. Maybe a couple of sentences from Guru, you're heading electrification and hydrogen.
So we did talk about this offline, so I don't have
time. He's checking me out whether I'm going to say the same thing, because you spoke with him separately. But that's a good one. You know? But we're normally going to speak the same thing.
That's a good thought.
Thank you. No, we should also joke a little bit, yeah? It becomes a... That's good, yeah? And he didn't tell me what he spoke with you.
Yeah, so, hi. This is Sonal Gupta here from L&T Mutual Fund. Finally, good to meet you in person. So, just a couple of questions. First, now we are sort of... we've seen the BS6 transition... in some segments we're starting to see electrification, but I mean just from a 3-5 year perspective from Bosch and India and from the listed entity perspective, what are your key goals and objectives or what is your key strategy here, other than obviously we'll all be moving along with the market growth and how the market shifts, but over and above that, how are you trying to direction the company?
We follow greatly the principles of our parent. And if you look at what our parent says, parent says we are invented for life. So the parent has always looked at, first of all, the parent is a private limited company. So we do the responsibility of a listed company, but don't act like a public listed company looking at quarter to quarter. So we invest for the future, always in advance, which we have done in the past, and you can see it from inline pumps to common rail systems to now what you will see in electrification and hydrogen. Second, we draw a lot of, you know, we don't reinvent America, but we draw a lot of inputs from our parents who have already been there, done that. You could see it from his, Guru's presentation, yeah, of the portfolio, the depth and the width, and what our parent has done, including acquisitions. And he even shared one slide on hydrogen, I think. So a lot of feet on the ground. So it's not theoretical. No, I think you showed three acquisitions worldwide, and India, you already saw one arrow and India map. That tells you something also. So our very clear focus is to remain a very serious player for not just core. If you're good at something, you have to retain that. So that's why we have rewired the core. I told one of your colleagues, you may not know, but Bosch Limited has reduced its headcount by 40 to 50%. Yeah, very quietly. And in the Bosch way of taking care of people, etc., etc. So rewire the core, also focus on adjacencies and transition for the transformation of the new business. So all three elements we are doing. So we want to remain the strong player that we have been in the core and the revived core. We have got into adjacencies based on all the emission roadmap Guru has shown and where we are relevant. I gave you an indication on the TAM, which has to be read volume, which means market, into content per vehicle. We are strong on content per vehicle. And then we talked about realistic dates of electrification versus breaking news. So you have to understand electrification will happen and hydrogen will happen, but at realistic dates. And we have the technical knowledge, but we will also be entering always for many of the at the right time. Otherwise, many companies will burn huge amounts of money. So very clearly, we want to retain our leadership position in mobility area, but also I shared with you, aftermarket, we are the leaders. Power tools, we are the leaders. Building technologies, we are not the leaders in a fragmented market. The building technologies, we are playing on the high HPP, but that's a small business. And we want to go to the MPP, and I shared that.
Got it. And so just a data point question in terms of, I think in FY17, just in terms of your OE business, I mean, could you sort of tell us broadly, like now, where are you in terms of your diesel gasoline mix, right? Like I think in FY17 used to be 90% diesel. Today, broadly, where, if any sort of indicator number?
You have to look at this from what has happened to the market. India went from a 15% diesel up to 48%. And now has come down to 20% on the UV and PASCAR only. Other thing, dieselization is high. Yeah. So, yes, we have had very high strengths in diesel because we came in diesel in 1953 with the inline pump. Yeah. Then we came with single cylinder, we came with many things. So, diesel boom at 48% naturally had a positive impact on Bosch India, but also Bosch Limited. 18 or 20% has a certain impact. But we are very strong on ICE, including gasoline. Yeah? We came gasoline relatively later, but now we are already 15 years. Yeah, 15, 18 years already. Not 69 years. You can't compare. But again, strong in a market where we have a pretty good market share. And we have a very good portfolio on electrification, hydrogen. He shared it. So this is ICE. This is Bosch has worked with flex fuels in different countries. I think Guru can talk a little bit about flex fuels and Latin America. And also you can talk a little bit about CNG. So we are there. But if flex fuels and CNG, I'll give it to him. No.
I was just trying to understand what's the sort of broad powertrain revenue split.
Powertrain, we will follow what the market's happening. So you have to really look at the market broken up into those five elements. Heavy commercial vehicles will be diesel until hydrogen and hydrogen ICE comes in
in a smaller way. And he shared already we are in it. Light commercial vehicles will be diesel, gasoline, we are in both, and electrification. We are in those elements. Three-wheelers, we are in, and when electrification comes, we have that. Two-wheelers, I think we have spoken about. And passenger, there's been a very detailed discussion. So, percentages are going to be driven by market, not by us. Acquisition books, this year is at all-time high.
Got it, sir. Thank you.
Hi, just one very simple question. I don't know, is it possible for you to simplify for us? I'm sure you must be measuring your company even in terms of the content per vehicle kind of thing. So if you put it, say, last 5 years, because FY22 anyway base is not probably right base, FY19 might be the peak of the industry, versus where we stand today, and with kind of technology change what Bosch Limited is doing, what do you think your aspiration in terms of the content per vehicle over next 5 years by 2029 or something like that, that will give us some idea in terms of how to look at, you know, the Bosch Limited. Because if I look at historical number of, say, last 5 years or last 8 years or last 10 years, the growth has been a little bit subdued, maybe due to the variety of reasons. But going forward, you know, over next 5-10 years, you are rightly positioned, technological advantage, absolutely we all agree. But how one should finally translate it into the scope of work, the content per vehicle for Bosch Limited?
So I gave you an indication on the content of vehicle of technologies that we are linked with, of what is changing in the market. And Bosch's content per vehicle can be very much be looked at in a similar way here. So basically content per vehicle is actually improving, increasing. Number one. The part that you're asking critically is, again, I think indirectly, is acquisition. It's not content per vehicle. I don't know, because that's what you're... Are you hinting at content per vehicle or on acquisition?
You mean acquisition of companies?
No, not acquisition of companies. Acquisition of orders.
Yeah, I mean, combined, basically.
Yeah. So, when you look at TAM, yeah, which is the target addressable market, yeah, or the total addressable market, we have a situation changed on emission norms, which I clearly showed, yeah. BS4, BS6, TREM 3, TREM 4, TREM 5, of actually maintaining the higher content per vehicle, number one. Number two, we want to always meet market growth and better it. And that you can't do unless you have the right acquisition or unless you have the right content per vehicle. And of course, finally, you have to have the ability to play in these markets, which we have shared. So, we have shared with you ICE, and we've shared with you, Guru has shared hydrogen and electrification.
Well, yeah, basically, you know, what I'm trying to understand is that when you put that volume number, like you have also mentioned in our interaction, that don't look at MHCV volume, you know, look at the overall tonnage, the haulage, am I right? So basically what is more important is the revenue growth of the industry, the underlying automotive industry, rather than looking at just the volume number, because volume has no meaning, correct? If I put it from that perspective, then Bosch India growth in last 5 years, last 7 years kind of number is not that encouraging number compared to your technological leadership, because you are number one when it comes to technology, correct? So I'm not going by the volume, as you rightly said, look at the haulage, correct? So internally, I'm sure when you are doing within your company, you would be presenting the haulage volume growth for last 5 years and projections for next 10 years. Rather than saying to the marketing guys, hey guys, industry is growing at 2%, we are happy with 3%. Definitely not. All right? That's not, I'm sure, that's not the objective. So how we can get that perspective and the blended mix, we are not too sure about the blended mix. All right? So yes, you have given presentation on how do you see the TAM over next 5 years for each of the segments. But what is our current mix? I mean, mix also keep changing depending upon, of course, the industry. How should we look at it, Bosch, say, 2029? I'm not asking quarterly because I know you don't talk about quarters, correct? Let's focus 5 years. In 5 years, the content per vehicle blended, or maybe you can give the blended index for you right now, wherever it is, compared to, say, last 5 years, and how do you see that over next 5 years? Some trends, I'm sure Future is unpredictable, very difficult to answer the question, but some trends.
So we'll share it a little bit amongst ourselves. I'll give the overall, and maybe Guru, you can specifically talk about electrification and hydrogen. Look, what happened in the last 4-5 years was there's been a huge reduction on diesel for passenger car and utility vehicles, which I talked about, the 48% to 20%, which has happened also in Europe. So naturally, that would have an impact on a company which was heavily dependent and focused on diesel. So you saw that impact from that angle. And while we continue to retain our strengths on diesel, we increase our strengths on other areas, keeping this in mind, that this is an irreversible trend, and one has to face it. And the settling down of 18 to 20% is something which is likely to stay also, number one. Second, what was very important was, were we prepared for the acquisition and the legislation change, the map that he showed, and to enter the market through acquisitions? And I gave you two data points. One data point was February 2020, we shared 23,000 crores for the next 5 years on BS4 to BS6. And I shared one more data point today saying that this year we've had the all-time highest acquisition for Bosch mobility business. That should give you already an indication, because it's acquisition, and my slide on content per vehicle is linked to legislation change. So that also gives you an indication on where we are. Now, these you can't directly now link to margins, because that's not linkable. Margins are dependent on the whole market, what happens, including the thing that happened in the world today, including logistics went haywire, RMI, etc. So you can't link it to margin. So do we have a game plan? Answers yes. Do we plan that out well before? Example, what he mentioned, and there I'll give it to him, on what we are planning, where India will be behind others, but electrification, hydrogen will come, and what we are planning. But over to you. So core, which is ICE, we are very much there, very clear game plan, including rewired core, and very clearly for the emission roadmap given. And the emission roadmap, I think you shared, is still 27 or 29? Till 29. So very clear game plan. Beyond core and rewired core on hydrogen, I give you a generic answer, but Guru, if you want to say something specifically on trends. And there, let me tell you, hydrogen electrification, don't expect one player to go to 80% and 90%. That's not the world that is going to be lived in. Yeah, there will be several players, including OEMs and new age players.
And you didn't answer the content per vehicle, some index, something. You know, I actually didn't get my answer, to be very frank. Because that's what my question is, you know. How should we look at it over 5 years?
Look, we look at numbers inside a company in a very different way compared to what we talk in public, because we will not do it in public. We look inside a company with rupees per vehicle or euro per vehicle.
That's what even we
do. And we clearly see what our content on X going up to 1.2 or 3 or 5, or in case of tractors even higher, and we very close loop that, because it's a worldwide system including in India, but we don't share it.
Achha. And what is the reason for that? Sorry for that. What's the reason for that? Because many global companies do share with their global shareholders.
All things you don't share with everyone.
I'm talking about the large companies, and you are a listed entity, am I right?
Yeah, we're a listed company, but look.
I mean, globally they share, I mean.
When I'm giving you a 1.5x, so I'll have to translate this for my colleague. Samajdaro ke liye ishara kafi hai. So for those who understand, a glance is good. I have given you more than a glance. This is the first time we have shared with you market, content per vehicle, and target addressable market. And you just have to add up the three and get your maths right.
Perfect.
I think that should be a good enough answer.
Just to elaborate a little bit, Soumitra showed the content per vehicle progression on our traditional technologies. So there you've seen the sort of progression we have. But in case of electrification, for example, the order simply multiplies several fold. True. So, you know, very easy to calculate, it's $10-$12 per kilowatt of every e-axle that gets in. So the acquisition value for us is even orders bigger than what we would have had with a diesel acquisition with somebody. So there, it's very easy for you to calculate. But he also mentioned a very important fact at this point of time in the electric vehicle evolution is that it's pretty chaotic or dynamic. The market shares and how things will play out are not steady state yet.
Sure.
We would be happy at this point of time if we are, as tier ones, looking at a 20% market share.
True.
That would be great.
Sure.
It's probably going to change in 5 years from now where positions change and we want to be a leader there as well. We are very, very well prepared for that. But as we move further, we can talk more about it. But right now, it's very dynamic to link these two and say, because of this, the content per vehicle and this is the
True.
Kind of acquisition potential, it's very, very hard to quantify.
Thank you, sir. Thanks.
Hydrogen, we showed the portfolio. I mean, it's actually 100x of where we are with regard to diesel. Very, very huge.
So, just on a lighter side, I deeply appreciate your persistence, but you will get the same answer from me.
Don't worry, we'll keep persisting.
Thank you.
Sir, this is Prateek from Nippon India Mutual Fund. Just one question. Yeah, so if you talked about you have no legacy in the electric version side, right? But do you do have a legacy when it comes to the traditional powertrains? Sorry? Okay, you do have a legacy when it comes to the traditional powertrains business. In terms of market shares, when this transition is happening, will you be able to maintain that same market shares or in this new transition, there are new competition coming in and hence the domination which we have, if I may use that word, in the ICE world might not be a correct picture in the EV world.
I really, you know, in McDonald's they say I'm loving it, you know. But, I have to decode your question whether you are wanting to know how much is our market share and where
no,
are we.
No,
so,
I,
thank you. Then it's pretty good.
No
okay.
numbers. I'm
thank
just saying
you, thank
the
you,
transition,
thank you.
Sir.
The, look, I won't use the word domination. Yeah, no market share is there for domination. We have used it like when we did for BS4 to BS6. I was sharing with some of your colleagues. Bosch has very good cross-domain knowledge. And because we have cross-domain knowledge, and because we look at customizing the solution for every OEM from the conception, yeah, and that was a very good example of BS4 to BS6 to the SOP.
Hmm.
So this we will continue to use as a USP.
Okay.
Bosch India is able to do a lot, and especially under Bosch Limited, a lot of cross-domain, cross-legal entity. Yeah, my colleague Guru was heading Automotive Electronics, and he was the MD of that company. But very close collaboration because Automotive Electronics is delivering into Bosch Limited. So, and Bosch Limited is also the front face to the entire customer. So, no other legal entity does that. Bosch Limited does that. So, we will continue to cross collaborate. We'll have the strong knowledge of what our parent does, of cross domain knowledge, and we will continue to get in as we do for core, revived core. In case of new businesses, we will again use our parents' knowledge and we'll do again cross-collaboration. But there, the playing field is different from which we have already indicated. So, we will continue. What is an outcome of
Correct.
That percentage? Yeah, that we don't look at. We go for every acquisition, naturally. We have an acquisition calendar. We look at, you know, naturally projects won, projects not won, etc. But if I give you an indication, we've had the all-time highest this year acquisition. Again, that gives you समझदारों के लिए इशारा काफी है।
Maybe just to add to what he said, on a global level, the Bosch acquisitions, as I said, crossed 22 billion euro in electrification alone. So we are the number one tier one in terms of acquisition value today. And the situation in India may be very different, and we are aware of it. We are doing everything to make the best of the situation here, because there are two Indian OEMs and the rest of them are global OEMs. A lot of them will bring global platforms. We are already designed into several global platforms, and they will come here as well. So the thing I would urge is, don't look at it at this point of time when it's still in a huge amount of flux. This thing will come to light maybe in 3 years from now, 4 years from now, when you start to see real volumes come into the market.
Sure. And sir, if I may stretch this question, from your perspective, in the listed entity, right? Obviously, look, ultimately it's the numbers which matter, and not getting into numbers, but directionally, when this transition happens, is there a phase where our legacy kind of pulls us down when this migration is happening, or it's an outcome which we don't know yet?
I wouldn't say that so far we've allowed any legacy to pull us down. The legacy has helped us invest consistently 5, 6 billion over the last 10 years in electrification. No other tier one has done it. So it's thanks to our very good legacy and our cash position is that we've been where we are today. So I wouldn't say that. But there is also an element of truth in what you say, that if you are too heavily invested in legacy, will we invest more into electrification? But this is a balance we are aware of, and we will watch this as we move forward.
Yeah, I'm only trying to say that the core, and perhaps you're talking only of Bosch Limited here.
Yes.
The core of Bosch Limited, you know, you have to protect. Because if you don't protect that, the new age business will come, but I've been repeating that compared to Europe and others, it'll come much later. Yeah, and we have to balance both. So the core we will protect, and what you call as legacy, I suppose, and the new business, we are already doing stuff before Indian industry was really working. We opened the project house when? 4 years ago? 2018. Yeah, so we opened that in 2018. So we will, and you saw already, we are doing investments, you know, for the new age business. So we will continue to invest. And besides that, our parent is investing massively. And we don't reinvent America. We take something.
True.
Then. So we will do both. Answer is both. But what percentage, when, that depends on how the market is moving.
Perfect. And second question is, in an EV world, the role of tier ones is as crucial, or their share in profit pools for tier ones will be very similar to what it is in an ICE world, or in this EV world, the OEMs have a higher share of profit pool rather than relying on tier ones for systems and solutions versus building out themselves, and hence having a higher share of that profit pool versus... I'm just asking, I don't know.
Look, let's talk about the non-EV world. Yeah, in the non-EV world of the ICE world, all these questions were asked before Common Rail came in. I remember, you know, Common Rail was introduced by Mahindra Scorpio in 2002. The same set of questions came in. I was at that time in Nasik as the plant manager, making Common Rail, the starting of Common Rail components, and the same questions came in. And our back door was the Mahindra factory. So these questions are bound to come. What happened? Diesel grew. There was a sharing of profits based on market determination. Market will determine. My last comment, any of these new businesses will have money which will initially you will not earn. How many people are earning money on selling electric vehicles? Let's ask this basic question. From volume part, from content part, and how much of the selling price is aided today by FAME? So you have to ask some very basic questions. So profits arrive at in a mature world, and that's what I'm saying, Bosch is using this maturity model which we have always used. Enter at the right time, be a significant player, and make the business grow profitability over time. So you have to enter at the right time, not too early, not too late. You have to have a program which Guru defined and showed you. This was not something hopeful. This is fleet on the floor. Feet on the floor, yeah? And finally, profits are a determination of how you run the business, and you can never define how much, whether OEMs will make more or suppliers will make less or more. It can never be defined. It has to be a win for the industry to survive. And profits come over time. And in electrification, hydrogen, it will happen over time. Initially, to say that you'll start making a bit of 10 or 20%, well, question mark.
Also, don't, I keep repeating this again and again, don't look at it from today's situation. It's still in a massive flux. OEMs are also finding their feet in electrification. So the margin, just the price increases in lithium ion battery cells over the last 2-3 years have been so massive to wipe out anybody's margin. So it's still a very, very, very early day in electrification to really determine how this will go further. But things will definitely change, and the whole value chain will sort of get re-written as we move forward. And we can watch this space.
Hi, Amit Nigam from Invesco Asset Management. So the question that I have is, for the future mobility, you had the PACE framework. Under automated, would that also include the entire powertrain, so a battery, the BMS, and the motor, which Bosch will have capability in? The PACE framework?
No, his question is, should I do that or you want to redo it?
So within the electric vehicle, the new powertrain, Bosch has the expertise to provide the entire powertrain, so the battery along with the BMS and the motor?
Yes, the answer to that is partially yes, because we are not into high voltage batteries.
Sure.
We are not into battery cells. We are into BMS for both low and high voltage. We are, of course, into powertrain, motors, e-axles, power electronics, everything there. But we do not make high voltage batteries. We only do low voltage batteries.
And the motors that you make can go across the voltage range. Is that a fair
Absolutely.
Assumption?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Some 48 volts all the way up to 850 volts. So, yeah, that's true. Not in India yet, but I'm talking about our portfolio coverage.
Got it. Yeah. And just last bit is that if I look at all the four components, PACE, as a revenue potential or a business that you can earn, if I remove the powertrain system, then what is left? So if 100 was the total opportunity, if I remove the battery, BMS, and the motor, what else remains that can be monetized? Was I clear with that question?
I mean, the question is clear, but I don't know if there is a straight answer to that. Because, see, personalized could be a one-off activity. So it could just be non-recurring engineering work we do to an OEM. It could be selling of an infotainment cluster.
Sure.
So that is recurring. Then for connected, it could be the selling of the telematics unit, but it could also be selling of services, on-cloud services, communication services, firmware over the air, lots of services
Correct.
Which come along
Correct.
With it. So it's very hard to quantify at this point of time when things are not yet fully established, even globally.
Sure.
These are all, I mean, there are multiple reports you would have read. The services part of mobility will outgrow the OEM part, I mean, the traditional part of mobility at some point of time.
Correct.
But we don't know how this develops as yet.
Okay, fair. Because since we were not clear, so we thought maybe
sure.
we can have some insights from you. But thank you so much for that.
So this is Arjun from Kotak Mutual Fund. My first query is regarding the legacy S-curve. So if one looks at the profitability of the legacy S-curve, how does that interplay given that we know it has a finite life? At some point in time, the curve will turn down. So when you all look at incremental investments, you talk about incremental investment towards indigenization and localization. So how do you look at the profitability of that business?
Every curve has a life, yeah. But we see that India is in a sweeter spot relatively to extend this life. I think Guru mentioned it already in his thing, and I would agree with what he said. That A, the S-curve will apply in different countries, it will apply for different time zones. In India, the chances keeping e-mobility plus as a possibility of 30% in 2030, which is different from Europe and US, gives us a better chance. Second, for core, you can also aggregate the core. That is also a possibility for us, you know, which is called the last man standing concept. And don't underestimate that. Third, everything has a life, and we should not underestimate the introduction of electrification in different forms and the introduction of hydrogen. And for that, as you saw, we have a parent and we are also getting very strongly prepared. Right now, already also Guru mentioned, it's very, very early nascent times. And this has to be understood. The OEMs and the industry are finding their feet. And this will continue for a few more years. So it will happen. We are reasonably confident of riding both the curves. A, protecting the core and rewiring the core on the traditional S-curve, and B, on the new S-curve, which is PACE, basically. PACE means also including electrification, but also the PAC. And we are also confident of riding this. And our parent is doing a lot of work on mobility of the future. And later, once our parent shares more about this, we'll share with you.
Sure. I'm actually just on the legacy bit in terms of the profitability, because not in terms of near-term margins, but if one looks at...
I'll give you a simple example. On the profitability, there are two elements. One is, how is your profitability based on your legacy, based on electrification, diesel, etc.? Second, what can you give to your customers? And third, what can you aggregate beyond your customers, but for India and the world? All three we are aware, and we are trying always to optimize. Many of the steps that we do on optimization are examples of what we do calmly, which is a part of a bigger story. Example, our 3R story. The 3R story, which we started 4 years ago, was exactly this. That we felt our workforce has to change, and it has to have a different level of competency, both for blue collar but also for white collar. So we start those journeys in cycles well ahead, and we want to maintain our profitability. I will not define and now tell you, is that going to be 12%, 16%, 14%? That I will not tell you.
The second part to that is, if one actually, as the analyst community, we've been speculating a lot of content increase. I think that slide of yours clarified a lot, so thank you so much for it. If we look at the trim side of it, someone did talk of domination, at least on the tractor side. We seem to have domination, if I could use that word, since we speak to most of the OEMs. We've talked of a 5.5x potential increase once TREM 5 also comes in. Right now, it's only 50 HP plus. But in terms of acquisition of orders, when one looks at market share, so that's just one example. If you look at PVs, CVs, and other segments also, would you say competitive pressures are high, which potentially could impact margins? Or do you think the market is yet trading fair in some sense of recuperating of profitability for the investments we are doing?
So I'll give a simple answer. These acquisitions are already happening, and Bosch is in a good way, in a very good way. And our OEMs are very intelligent, because you have to respect the OEMs. Whatever acquisitions we are getting are on merit. And again, I repeat, because of being a full service provider, we are not just a component server. We also give huge amount of engineering services. So a lot of billings come from engineering services. And we have a, how much do we have? 450 colleagues working? 500? Huh? Just on engineering, just for powertrain. So you have to please examine what is Bosch Limited and Bosch in India delivering to the customer. A customer doesn't look at a selling price. A customer looks at the total package. And this, I don't want to use the domination, this USP we want to continue across.
Sure. So my just final question is, as we move on to more being a systems provider rather than just a component provider, there obviously would be some risks. We've seen some EVs catch fire, I understand maybe not our product. But how do you all put that risk in the overall context in terms of the business, and how do you mitigate that risk going forward? Thank you.
I will say a few sentences, and then after that you can talk, because we will not talk about who's caught fire and why. I'll give you my personal experience about Bosch 28 years. You know, Bosch is an extremely process-oriented company which believes tremendously on reliability and safety of products. Our safety of products and the liabilities of products, etc., you won't believe it, every employee has to go through a very tough web-based training, including me. And sometimes I don't pass in the first attempt, you know, the whole concept of that is the level of what Bosch is in terms of belief on safety, on reliability of products, and it's not just in electrification. Electrification is very important. So when Bosch started putting money into electrification 12 years ago, a huge amount of effort went into understanding of repeatability, safety, reliability. Across the world, not just in Europe, but beyond that, Guru.
Yeah, I would only say that EVs will catch fire, so accept it. Right now, this is something that we have to go through for maybe two reasons. One is they are inadequately designed. The other one is they are marginally designed. For Indian weather conditions or robustness conditions and so on. So this is a phase of learning for everybody in the industry. So not to beat one or the other, but this is something that we will go through. But I've personally gone to the secretary and made a pitch on why this happens, why batteries are catching fire, and what could be done to mitigate this, and how could we have more robust battery designs or more robust EV designs from our global knowledge base that we have shared with the secretary. So a lot of changes are also coming in. And I would also say that these changes will only make our position stronger.
Sure. Thank you.
Beyond that, you get a hint, sir.
Hello, sir.
My boss warns me that nothing Bosch related has caught fire in the market yet. So, take it.
So, yeah. This is Vinay here from Karma Capital. So, just had one question. So, you talked about the. So you talked about the volume CAGR for the next 7 years from 22 to 29 for the different segments, and you even shared the data for the content per vehicle going up for these segments. So just had one query. So when you talk about the total addressable market, the TAM, why is it lower than the volume growth which you are seeing for segments like PV, MHCV and LCV to be in particular? Just wanted to understand that thing. Because if I see the volume CAGR which you have mentioned for passenger vehicle is around 4.5%, whereas TAM for passenger vehicle is around 2.2%. So just wanted to understand that conflict which is there.
you need to look for this question only at slide number one. Don't look at it from TAM, because TAM is the value.
Right.
Because TAM is a outcome of the total volume multiplied by content per vehicle. So here, what you're asking, the better way to look at it is slide number one. And there we are seeing, as per our indication currently, the best possible case for India is a 30% for UV and pass car.
Correct.
For EV. That's all. So you need to look at that. And there we said 4.04 or 4.2 this year would likely go to 5.9 or something. Yeah, I think I remember. 5.8 or 5.9. So that's what you need to look at. And then 30%. The TAM is an outcome based on content per vehicle, volume, and then you have to look at the TAM based on the X and the Y, where we've kept CNG as the base.
Right.
So then you have to look at the ratio of what is changing.
No, so my understanding was that when you're calculating the TAM CAGR also, you would have taken into consideration the 30% EV penetration which is coming through. And it the content per vehicle versus for an EV versus a CNG
no,
is 20
the
20
EV part
times.
Is not taken into account.
Oh,
there,
okay.
The ICE, because if you remember, on the right side, I had written over the ICE.
Okay.
It was not written EV. There were two parts of the slide. One part of the slide was TAM value 22, TAM value 29.
Right.
Then the total delta and the value. And then there was a line. I said, please look at the line. That's the Lakshman Rekha.
Yeah.
And then you look at the right side.
Right.
And there you look. And the top, it was written, if I'm not wrong, I'm just asking the colleagues who did it, ICE. I recollect, yeah, ICE. So it was ICE.
Even for MNHCV, which is largely going to be a diesel market.
And ICE, clearly. There is not
hydrogen. So over there also, there is this drop which is coming in.
No, because it's very simple. 4,80,000 and 3,60,000. You have to look at, the moment you look at TAM, you have to look at the volume base. We achieved 4,80,000 in 18-19.
Correct.
And the best case, if I'm not wrong, is 3,60,000 in 2029. So you have to look, even if the 1X became 1.5 or 1.6X,
right.
The base is 3,60,000.
So you're not expecting the peak to come even in...
I'll tell you why.
But most OEMs are talking about maybe achieving at least the MNHCV volumes over the next 2 years, the peak which they had achieved
please.
In 2018-19.
Vinay, please. You have to look at the reality. What is this year going to be? Look, you have to look at a data point which is available today in the market. Axle, tonnage,
right.
And haulage. The speeds have gone up considerably. 5 years ago, we had 1,200 tolls. There was no fast tag. Second, the government allowed 20% extra loading. And all of us know, beyond the official 20%, how much is the extra loading.
Right.
Third, the axle has changed considerably. So your logistics has changed completely. Your railway and road, I mentioned, has come in. Not so much waterways, but... I expect Nitin Gadkari will also work on waterways, which is good for India. So, it is... Look, I will not contest respected OEMs, but we work very closely in a marketing department I have respect for also.
Yeah.
And we believe that it will take a significant time for this part to reach, because we are not comparing apples to apples.
Understood.
You're comparing apples to oranges.
Got it. Yeah. Thanks.
Hi, this is Jayesh Shah from Home Portfolio. I have a couple of questions. Going back as a follow-up to the earlier question on the profit pool for the OEMs versus vendors on electrification, and the fact that you say that it's too early right now to make any judgment or talk about, you know, profitability. Given the fact that you guys are investing into these electrification projects, how do you look at payback or IRRs?
Maybe I'll answer after you.
No, I mean, The simple thing is we are looking at project level paybacks, and these are acquired projects. We acquire a project with a Ford, and then we calculate how that acquisition should look like. So that's as simple as that. See, the reason, the deeper question there is OEMs are also trying to figure out what to do internally, what they should get done through tier ones. And they started with some position based on what one of the OEMs successfully demonstrated so far. And everybody tried to ape that, and everybody said we will verticalize 100%. 90% of the OEMs have now changed stack. They've all come back and started to redo things because they're just not good at it. Eventually, the whole thing game will come down to who has the right resources to do it. And everybody in the value chain is fighting for similar kind of resources. So that's the reason I say wait for a couple of years for the flux to clear, and then you start to see who is swimming naked.
So safe to believe that this is a modular capex or opex investment when you do, where you do have eyes on payback and IRRs based on your internal benchmark.
So let me try to give you a broad directional answer.
Yeah.
In any of the future businesses, there will not be a straight-jacketed, closed box in how you should tackle. Because on one hand, any company with who has sanity on economics, and Bosch has a little bit, will not get into a perpetual burn. Nobody. Yeah. So, and definitely we will not get into that. Second, you will always want to do to say that you don't want to miss an opportunity, market opportunity, but also have the back-end processes, which Bosch has a very strong back-end process on IRR, payback, acquisition value, contracting, and so on and so forth. You know, that's why Bosch is Bosch. So we will continue to use that, but we will also continue to look, and there Guru has already shared in one of his slides, for example, on hydrogen, how Bosch is already having feet on the street, and we will see that in the long run, in the medium run, this becomes a winner. So summary is, too much flux in a nascent market which is not yet mature, where people are trying out different things, and it'll settle down, and we have our own systems also to enter new areas, which we have done decade after decade. And we will look at how to be embedded, but in the right place, right time, and we will use our resources to do it, like we've done it earlier. We could have, you know, not been the person to bring in Common Rail in India. We could have, you know, said, right, let somebody else come in and bring Common Rail. We could have not entered gasoline because we entered diesel so early. We could have said, why 15 years ago, why should we enter? The market is crowded. So we will be doing it, and we will not do it with having a situation where the market, when it's too nascent, will be like work from home. Initially, when COVID happened, we said everyone will work from office. Then we said 100% will be work from home. Then we said no, now it's going to be hybrid. So
yeah,
let it settle down. You know, COVID has taught us a lot of things. Let things settle down and not make judgments.
How we calculate project IRRs, how we do it for new projects.
Yeah, well, I think the main point is, if you have an initial project which you do together with a customer, then you have, of course, a certain purpose to come to a proof of concept, for
right.
example. Then you are doing the project calculation. You, of course, make an estimation, but this is what you are doing together with a customer to make to reach a certain milestone, and then to say, okay, go or no go further on. And I think that we have very much clarity, and of course it gives us also input from the customers to go further in the market and to understand the market. But I would like also to add is, it is not black and white, the market, but this sort of projects also give us the opportunity to co-create the market, yes, to leave our footprint with the big OEMs, yes, to also, I would say, to give our input in which direction do we can we go together with the OEMs. And this is also an opportunity. So I think the cost and the return on invest in this project is one thing. This we follow up very clearly, let's say, and we don't want to lose money, but we also have to see it as an opportunity to look into the future together with the OEMs and to co-create the market.
So if I understand this correctly, this would be some kind of pilot projects backed by at least anchor customers. That's how you would start and then
POCs
probably go modular.
POCs are there, what Karin mentioned. You can do POCs, you can enter a project. There are different forms of doing, but POCs are also a part of it. I mean, I'll give a small example to extend what Karin mentioned. Bosch has regularly co-created with the government of India on multiple things, looking at what is beneficial. Karin mentioned rightly that what is beneficial for the end customer, and here I would say what is beneficial for India. Like, we have worked for the last 12 years with government of India on accident research. We have worked with the government of India on advanced technologies and its definition. The government of India has openly acknowledged it. Yeah? And we do it in an agnostic, tech-agnostic manner, which again shows you that we have the conception to SOP knowledge, what I call as cross-domain knowledge, which is localized for India. So Karin's example of co-creation with the OEM can be extended to also co-creation with the government. Again, for what is good for India, innovation come, affordability come, advanced technology.
Thank you. My second question is, am I correct in the perception, which could be wrong, that Bosch would normally be working very closely only with German automobile companies?
Here I can clearly say no. It is an and, like many things in life. Bosch works very closely with Korean companies, with J OEMs, with K OEMs, with I OEMs, with European OEMs, with American OEMs. Bosch works across the world.
Okay, and a related question, you know, this is bit of, I'm bringing in a bit of geopolitics and the current situation here.
The tough one I'm going to give to Guru and Karin.
Yeah, my question is, given whatever we hear in the media about things happening in Germany and the power shortage and the gas shortage, is there any short-term or long-term implication, cyclical, structural, especially from the automobile industry and Bosch's point of view? And does it open the case for Bosch being an outsourcing base for the parent then rather than just doing the work for the Indian market? Thanks.
So I would like to come back to the current shortage and the current situation in Europe. And there I would like to give you the answer from a German. I'm a German. Guess what? I would like to give you the answer from a German perspective. The automotive industry in Germany is the backbone. It's the backbone and is the backbone. That means the wealth of Germany and is really relying on the automotive industry. And therefore, I'm sure, and this is what I say as a German and how I perceive the situation in Germany, we will do everything to protect our automotive industry because this is the only way for the German government to go ahead. Otherwise, we have a huge problem, and we have already a problem in Germany that we face an inflation which we never had after the Second World War. So that means emotions, fears in Germany, in the society, are already there. If you put on top economical disaster in the automotive industry, then we have most probably a government crisis. So therefore, I think we will do everything to protect our industry and to somehow solve this problem that we keep the industry running.
So the media is overreacting on the BASF plant closure, is it?
Yeah, the point is, you know, the media only bad news are good news.
Right.
And yes, there is a plant closure, but as I know also BASF, and they do not make it on account of profits or on account of people or whatsoever. They do it when they can work with it, yes. So I'm sure there will be tough times, especially if you come into the winter season, if we get a hard winter, for example, there will be tough times. But the point is that we have to balance it somehow in Germany. And of course, as soon as you have the first plant closure, then media is making a report out of it.
I'll make an independent comment, and I'm now saying this as an Indian. You know, the German Mittelstand, or what we call as the MSME, along with the OEMs, is the backbone of the industry. And the German Mittelstand, or the MSME, is unbelievably strong, and actually it defined this whole concept of made in Germany. Earlier, many of us who are on the slightly, you know, older side used to call it made in West Germany. Today we call it made in Germany after the wall came down. So I'm personally confident, and this is not about Bosch, this is about the country, that the country will survive and thrive because the base is very strong. And the base on quality is unbelievable in the value chain. In India, we have a huge challenge between the OEM and Tier 1, and an even bigger challenge between Tier 1 and Tier 2. That challenge I don't see too much in Germany because of this very strong, practically, you know, 80 years, 100 years tradition and background, including their education system. So I'm saying this out of belief, and I've personally been going out to this country for the last 31 years.
Thanks. So any chance of the outsourcing possibility or thinking, given where India is and given these special nature of the Indian market, and does it allow you to indigenize here and do something abroad?
So there are three statements which I shared with some of your colleagues. India is going to remain primarily a strong domestic market. The possibilities for Bosch India in India are huge. Don't underestimate it, number one. Number two, we have been doing, you know, between 10 and 15% of our Bosch Limited turnover as exports over
right.
decades.
Yeah.
And we went down to 8 or so, and we'll climb up, but we'll be in that range, you know, 10, 12, 15, around that. Number three, when opportunities come, and not necessarily from Germany, it could be from different parts of the world, for a possible relocation, which has happened earlier. You know, we have had relocation, small relocations from Japan or Korea or whatever. We will take those relocations. So we will continue to be focused on India. We will not forget our exports and grow on them. But we will not become an export-oriented unit.
Thank you very much.
Maybe just to complete that thing you asked about the German industry. German auto industry is not just the BMWs and the Daimlers, you know, that supplier level, they supply to virtually every car maker or every automaker in the world. So if they sneeze, everybody catches a cold. So in that context, the government, although it's a very difficult situation for the rest of this year, I'm very sure they're taking enough measures to ensure that they come out much stronger as they move forward.
Yeah. Last question, sir. Time
will
take the last question.
Yeah. This is Gokul from Auriga Capital. Just one question. Does Bosch's EV products qualify for FAME subsidies? Because there's a requirement for internet being made locally over here. So if you could just clarify that.
The answer is yes. We will ensure that adequate levels of localization is brought in into everything we offer to the OEMs, and we are discussing on future acquisitions with OEMs on how can we introduce phased value add increases so that cost-wise it's a good proposition for them, because if you unnecessarily localize extensively now, we may end up adding more cost than what even FAME can subsidize. So in that context, we are discussing with OEMs and working with them to ensure that everybody, including the consumer, benefits as an eventual consequence of PLI and FAME.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For him to give